Local Kyoto.
We have Randy Channel here today. He's a renowned tea master here in Japan, and he has made his home here in Kyoto, where he runs a beautiful establishment called Ran Hotei. And although he's best known for tea nowadays, his long and interesting tale did not actually begin with tea or Japan. It started with the martial arts. We're going to explore all that. We have him here today live. Randy, I think we should start right at the beginning. Well, sort of in the middle.
Okay.
The beginning goes back to Canada, right? You're from
That's
Canada?
That's true.
Okay, so we'll actually start with Ran Hotei here. Now, first question, because this show is for Gaijin as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, running a business as a foreigner in Japan,
mm-hmm.
How do you go about that?
I mean, if you're business savvy, I guess it would not be a problem. Of course, I'm not business savvy, so I just keep running a business that's been in the red ever since I opened it. And this year is the 10th year. I have my 10th anniversary coming this May. So,
10 years in the red.
10 years in the red.
That's worth something, isn't it?
You would think so.
So, if you're in the red, how does it stay afloat?
From my peripheral work in tea and media and things like that. So whatever comes into the right hand goes out to the left hand.
So is the Ran Hotei like a labor of love then? Or is it...
Let's just call it a labor.
A labor. And so getting to the tea though, when you were studying tea,
mm-hmm.
obviously your tea master, your master was Japanese.
Yes.
And were there any language issues, or were you already proficient in Japanese?
No. When I first came to Japan, I didn't speak Japanese at all. And I started in, actually, Matsumoto in Nagano-ken.
Mm-hmm.
And my sensei didn't speak a word of English, and I didn't speak a word of Japanese. So it was basically just through the process of what they call in Japanese, onaishi, which is like parroting, that I would watch her movements, listen to what she was saying, and things like that. And so, I mean, it was just a progression, a natural progression of things. Even to this day, my Japanese sucks, if you consider how long I've been here.
Really?
Japan. Yeah.
How long have you been here, just for the record?
Oh, like, God, I forget. 30-some years, 32, uh-huh. something like that.
This tale, in case people are wondering what happened with the tea, before that, since Canada, you actually got into martial arts, mm-hmm. thanks to the Bruce Lee, right?
Yeah.
And, that took you to China?
Not to China, to Hong Kong. I mean, well, I guess it's China now, but Hong Kong.
Yeah. And so the arts that you studied,
mm-hmm.
we'll get to the martial arts later, but what I want to set it up for the tea is that there was something you weren't getting from the martial arts.
Yes, there's a phrase in Japanese that actually comes from a Chinese phrase, and in Japanese it's bun bu ryo do, which means the martial and cultural ways kind of together in unison. Much similar, I guess, to the American military concept of an officer and a gentleman. You know, you don't want to just beat somebody like a thug. You want to be able to have some kind of artistic beating talent.
Beat them with grace.
Exactly.
And so that is what brought you,
What brought me to Japan was the desire to study the Japanese martial arts. I didn't come to study tea. I came to study the martial
gotcha.
Arts.
And
that's when I found that there was an imbalance to my study because I wanted to open myself to this martial and cultural way of living. And so by only studying the martial arts, I was kind of in an imbalance with my yin and yang, so to speak. So inside the martial arts themselves, there would be a balance of yin and yang. Mm-hmm. Like I would be doing a hard style, and then there would be a soft style related to it. And so that would kind of balance that. But they were still all martial arts. And so I needed something cultural. So to that end, I was lucky that my kendo sensei was a calligrapher. So I studied calligraphy. And one of the other senseis I knew was a koto sensei. And so I studied koto, but apparently have no talent for either. And so just by chance, the lady next door was a tea master. And so I went to her, like we talked about. It was great. Because there were so many similarities in the way of tea and the martial arts. And so it was really, I was so enthralled with it right from the beginning.
Yeah, and now, for those of you who don't know, there is, Randy actually has written a book called Chanoyu, is that correct? Chanoyu?
Chanoyu, the Book of Chanoyu, Tea, the Master Key to Japanese Culture.
And this book is bilingual. It's like when you open it up, half is Japanese and then the other half of the page or underneath will be the English.
Yeah, it's actually very good because even I know... Japanese people have told me that if they can't even understand the Japanese, they look at the English, and the English is easy to understand. So
really?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I did the writing in English, so the translator put it into Japanese. So,
who was the translator?
My student is Sawada Mikiko. Oh, she was the editor of the whole project.
Oh, we got to definitely give her credit then. Okay, what was her name again?
Sawada Mikiko.
Okay. Now, one of the things I remember we spoke one time a while back is... The ceremonies are done according to season?
They're related to the seasons. I wouldn't say that they're done according to the seasons. I mean, you can do tea every day. You have to be conscious of the changing of the season. You know, yeah. I wouldn't want to be serving something that would make you feel cold in the middle of winter, you know, and vice versa in summer. So you have to pay attention to the seasons.
Does the sort of atmosphere of the room that you're doing the ceremony in, is that affected by the season? The sort of utensils that you use?
The utensils will change. Not everything. Of course, there are utensils that you can use all year round, but there are pieces that are used only for the winter, or only for the summer, and things like that. You would find probably the easiest way to see things would be through the sweets that are served. The sweets are very often related to the time of the season, things like that. Actually, today I brought a sweet that's in the shape of an ume, so a plum-shaped sweet, which is plum is very popular in this time of the year.
So, yeah, we technically in spring, it's begun, hasn't
yes,
it?
We've
cast out the demons the other day and yes. with the beans, yeah, the mame or whatever. So I want to say this too. The Book of Chanoyu is, you can find it at bookstores here in Japan, of course, and you can find it on amazon.co.jp.
Right.
And Rakuten?
Rakuten also. Yeah, so, but you have to have an account on both of those. It's not really convenient. I am currently trying to figure out how, if you're say an amazon.com or an amazon.ca or whatever, you can actually find the book, but right now I don't have the idea how to do it.
All right, so that's
out
there. So
pain in the ass.
It is, yeah. I imagine it is. Yeah, I know. I don't know how it is with books, but I know I was listening to an interview with a former guitarist, Alice Cooper's guitarist, and he said, you know, releasing a record, there's like 12 plates you got to spin at the same time, yeah. balance everything. It's not so easy as just, oh, we cut the record now, yeah. let people buy it. It has to get to people.
Exactly.
So book sounds like the
and,
same.
And it's only in its first printing, too, and so I don't see anything until the second printing.
Gotcha.
So.
Now, we're going to stick with tea for a while, but Randy actually has his own blends of tea. There are two thick blends and two thin blends.
Right, exactly. And the way of tea, or the tea ceremony, as most people refer to it, is serves matcha or powdered green tea, and in the serving of this powdered green tea, we use two different kinds of tea. One is a thick tea and one is a thin tea. So to that end, I developed, first of all, of course, I just developed one thick tea and one thin tea, and then a few years after that, I developed my second tea, another thick tea and another thin tea. So I have two varieties, like a lower level and a middle level, and then my next one will be an upper level.
For those of us who, because I know almost nothing about tea, so when you say blend, is that like different combinations of leaves? Is that what blend means?
You could think that. I mean, all tea comes from the same plant. It doesn't matter if it's Oolong Cha or Earl Grey or Pekoe or whatever. All tea comes from the same plant.
No, I didn't know that, actually.
No, most people don't. And it's not really a tea if it doesn't come from that plant. So all your herbal drinks and things like this, the herbal tea, they'll call them teas, but they're not teas. They're infusions. And so it's the way of the processing that makes the tea different. And so the Japanese tea, or the tea that's used for the Japanese way of tea, is the purest form of tea that you can get, because there's nothing done to it. The leaves are picked, steamed, dried, and then ground into a fine powder. There's no oxidization, there's no fermentation, there's no flavoring, there's no smoking, there's nothing like that that some of the other teas follow to get their unique flavors.
So it's pure tea?
100% pure tea. And you're drinking the whole ground leaf itself, not just the steeped broth or the steeped infusion and then throwing the leaves away. You're drinking the whole leaf itself. So apparently it's minerally and nutritionally much better for you. I don't know how many hard, fast studies there are, but we do know that it has the highest content of antioxidants to anything on Earth that you can consume.
I've had matcha before, and it's sort of a bitter flavor. It really is grainy, like you can, gritty, I guess. You can
taste.
That
means the person that made it didn't do it very well.
Oh, okay.
Because I'll be perfectly honest, if you drink my tea, you won't find it bitter or grainy. There's a slight sweetness to it, and there shouldn't be any grainy left. It should be all blended properly. And that's a problem in Japan, is because it has that negative, bitter association to it. And that's just the problem of the people making the tea don't have the experience to put it out properly. That's one of the first things that I tell, especially when people ask, well, why do you serve sweets at a tea ceremony? Oh, because the tea is bitter and wanted, you know. No, the tea is not bitter. The sweets are served to accentuate the taste of the tea. That's it.
See, there you go. Every time I've had it, it's been that that bitter kind
Well, you're lucky today because I brought my own tea here for you, and I'll be making tea for you later.
Yeah, and I can't wait to try it because before we get to that, can you say, like, I mean, without, obviously you haven't seen the people that served me tea, but what are they doing wrong?
Well, I mean, in the concept of the way of tea, there's no such thing as bad tea. But if you go to a coffee shop or something like that, it's just basically the staff doesn't have the proper training to make the tea well. And then again, according to the different traditions of tea, they make the thin tea in a different style. So some of the thick, some of the thin teas in other Liuha or traditions will make the tea not as frothy and creamy as we do at Urasenke, which is the tradition I belong to. And so what they're doing wrong is just not doing it enough.
Doing
the tea enough, doing practicing enough. Uh-huh. And the other part of it is, first of all, you have to know what good tea tastes like. You know, it's like, I compare it to wine. I mean, you could bring in the best bottle of wine in the world and serve me a drink of it, and I go, what's that? You know, it's like, if you're not knowledgeable and skilled in it, you're not going to know so much about it. And then that's another point. When you're making tea, if you buy the most expensive tea in the world, even if you don't have the skill to do it, then it will be bitter. We'll actually experiment today when we're doing it here. You'll find out what I'm talking about. You know, and like I said, the quality of the tea comes into play, but not until you actually know what the flavor of the tea is like. So, I mean, there are many things that come into play. It could be the amount of tea they put in. It could be the amount of water they put in. It could be the temperature of the water they put in.
And what about the water? You're not using tap water, I imagine, when you
In the way of tea properly, I mean, if I'm going to serve tea in a formal gathering, I'd go to a famous well at 4 o'clock in the morning and draw the water that's going to be used for that day, which, of course, I did for you today. I'm very lucky to be able to teach at Nashinoki Shrine, which is one of the three major wells in Japan, or in Kyoto, called the Sandai Meisui. And so we have the Somei-i, which is the dying well. Not the dead dying, but the kimono dying color well.
Right, the DY, not the DI. Yes. When storing tea, how long can you store tea, under what conditions?
Well, I mean, it depends on how much you're buying and how much you're using it. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I don't do anything but put it in a can and leave it out. But if I'm not making tea but once a week or something, then I'll put it in the refrigerator. It'll last 6 or 7 months quite easily.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know what? Because I got the Japanese address. Mm-hmm. Can you tell everybody in English how to find your place?
If you're living in Kyoto, it's in the Sanjokai Shotengai, which is the Sanjokai Shopping Arcade. It's Sanjo Omiya, so it's a little west of the Omiya Park. It's the third shop on the south side. The design of the concept of the design when I made the shop was Taisho Roman meets Art Deco. So Taisho Roman is the period in Japanese history kind of coinciding with the Art Deco movement in America and Europe, and I'm really a big fan of Art Deco. And I thought that the two would meld together quite nicely. And in my shop, they do. The problem is that a lot of my stained glass is more Art Nouveau than Deco, and I don't like that so much. But it was a question of money and time. I do have one chandelier that's very, very beautiful, and it is, without a doubt, a Deco piece, so that's quite nice.
Maybe I've seen it.
It's above the Kaidan Dansu.
Then I saw it. But of course, not knowing what to appreciate, I didn't know what it was. So I didn't look up very much.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Okay.
That's actually an interesting point, because that's looking up is what made me want to get that shop. They have what we call a fukinuke in the Japanese traditional house like that. Mm-hmm. And the front of the house is all low-ceilinged, and then I walked in when I was first taking a look at the shop before I rented it. And I walked through the kitchen, and it was just pow, and it was open, like, I don't know how many meters, right to the top. And I thought, oh, this is cool. I can do something with this. Uh-huh. And that's how I got caught.
I went there and they serve not just tea. I mean, I had a quiche kind of thing?
Yeah, we have a small list of things to eat. I mean, curry is the one that seems to be most popular.
Yeah.
Several people at the beginning was mistaking it for a curry shop. I had a lot of people, actually some of the radio shows, one of the radio announcers was quite enthralled with it, and he had the curry there, and then he asked me to come to the show, and I brought curry to the show, and so it was, you know, so curry is the main one, but we also have quiche, like you mentioned, and we have like a tomato based meatball stew or something. Mm-hmm. And then also soup. The soup is 100% vegetarian. And I think that's about it. And then, of course, we have cakes and sweets.
rare because in Japan it's hard to find vegetarians sometimes.
They don't understand the concept of vegetarian. If you ask for, like, I'll have just give me some fried vegetables, they'll say, oh, thank you, and they'll put meat in. no meat. So I mean it's and it's funny because they do have a culture of shojin ryori, which is total vegetarian, but it just doesn't compute so well. A lot of people when they're coming to Japan have that problem.
Okay, so what do you think?
Tea time?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll need some hot water first.
Okay, so we're gonna do here is Randy likes blues, correct?
I love the blues. I play the blues.
So we're going to listen to King for a little bit, and when we come back, we'll have some tea and maybe do some martial arts.
Sounds good. The preparation I'm doing today is a very basic preparation. It's one of the first ones we learn at the Udo Senkei tradition of tea. It's called Bon Ryaku, or Ryaku Bon. So you can see I have a tray set out here with the tea on the tray and a tea bowl as well with the other utensils that are necessary. And then some hot water. In front of you, you have a sweet.
Yes.
So why don't you partake of the sweet now? So all just right. Kind of make a slight bow of respect.
Okay.
Yeah. And then... And so it's a nice sweet that's a seasonal kind of sweet. What I'm going to do is purify the utensils in front of you. Of course, they've all been cleaned before they're put out. Mm-hmm. But to show my respect and appreciation for you partaking of the tea I'm about to serve, I purify the utensils once again in front of you.
Okay.
So to that end, first I purify the container that's actually holding the tea. And then I do that with a silk cloth called a fukusa. And then I purify the tea scoop. While I'm doing the purification, it's said that I'm to be polishing my own character, or polishing my own spirit, if you would. And so next, using hot water, I purify the tea bowl and the tea whisk. So the bowl is actually from Thailand, and the tea container, I don't know if you can recognize it, it's a Canadian piece from the Haida Indians, and the water container that I just threw the water into is from China, so you can see it's very international. So. Yeah.
Okay, Randy's taking the container of the... With the matcha in it now, right?
Yes. So I'll put in two scoops. I put in a large scoop and a smaller scoop. And then I pour the water in. And then I put my silk cloth down. I stand up and you come in. And you're going to try to make the tea.
All right.
You sit down in front of the... Hold the bowl from above with your left hand so it doesn't move, and you take the tea whisk with the right hand. The motion in the bowl is just 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock, straight up and down. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Straighten your back, round your arms, chest out, faster, faster, harder, harder, stronger, stronger. Go, go, go. Faster, harder, stronger. Okay? And then you draw a circle in the center of the bowl, bring the tea whisk out, and then you put it back next to the tea container.
Here?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, and now you go in the back and sit down where you were. And I'll serve this to you. Normally, of course, you wouldn't be doing this. I would make the tea for you, but I want you to taste the tea that you just made.
Taste my own medicine.
There you go.
Okay. Strain it like this?
Just like that. What you want to do properly is, if it was made for me, you would say, Otemai chodai tashimasu, which means thank you for the tea. But at any rate, just pick up the bowl, say at 3 o'clock, with the right thumb, put it on your left palm like that,
okay.
And hold it back in this fashion, make a slight bow of respect.
Okay.
And then you turn the bowl, say, from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock, 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And then take one sip, just one sip. So how does that taste?
A little bitter.
A little bitter, like you were talking about earlier, right? So what happens is the tea is, like I said, it should be whisked more vigorously. And you want to concentrate on the bubbles. Because our tradition at Udo Senkei, we make very fine, delicate bubbles and thick bubbles. And so hopefully this one will be a bit different. So you can try that. Just put it on your palm again and just continue reading.
Oh, yeah, there is a difference.
Yes.
And it's almost like a creamy texture now.
Yes,
too.
And that's the way it should be. And that's why I said before that when the majority of people that have tea is they're getting tea from it's not poor tea or bad tea, it's just the people that are making it don't have the proper experience to know what the tea should taste like. Mm. And so hopefully you're not getting that grittiness, and there should be a slight umami or sweetness to the tea as well.
There is.
That's why I get the big bucks.
And now at this point, because we don't know, are we supposed to drink all the tea quickly, slowly?
No, I wouldn't say quickly, but it's not like in the West where you're going to drink the tea, talk, and put it down, eat something, and drink, eat, talk. This is something that you're paying respects to the person that made the tea for you. You're holding the tea in both hands, and you're drinking it all. You're not drinking it like beer, but you would take about three and a half sips and enjoy each sip as you drink it. And then the first sip and the last sip should have sound. The first sip is a clue for me as to where the procedure is. The last sip is from the guest to the host showing that, oh, this tea is so good, I want to drink it all up. Mm-hmm. And so when you get to the end, you suck it up.
I'll have to practice that because I can't slurp my noodles even.
Well, slurping noodles is not really good. And then you wipe it from, say, 7 o'clock to 5 o'clock where your mouth was on the bowl with your finger.
Okay.
If your mouth's bigger, you can go from 8 to 4.
Right.
Or 9 to 3.
I got a big mouth, but only figuratively.
Well, 9 to 3 then.
Yeah.
And then you turn the bowl back counterclockwise twice.
Right.
And then just put it down, and I would take it back.
Oh, okay.
And so from here, the procedure would continue. I could make more tea for you. If there are other people, I'd make tea for other people. But from here, we'll just kind of close up the procedure.
Okay, yeah.
And so you can see this is pretty, I don't want to say it's simple, it's not simple by any stretch of the imagination, but it is something that I do with this particular style of tea. I do it everywhere. I do it on TV, I do it, you know, I've had students do it on first class in the airplanes.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so let me close off here.
All right. Randy is now putting away what do you call these?
In English, you could say utensils, tea utensils. I mean, they're various arts and crafts from various walks of life. As I mentioned in the book, it's the key to Japanese traditional culture, and it reflects in the style of ceramics, in the way that the woodwork is done, in the way it uses bamboo and metalwork and things like that. So it's a complete art form.
And the whisk is what, bamboo?
The whisk is bamboo, and the tea scoop is bamboo.
And where are those from? Just
the tea scoop is something that I make myself every once in a while. Every year I give one to the Nikko charity auction, which is actually about to just happen. I think I can't remember if it's Takashimaya or Daimaru or something this year. I don't remember where it is. And so it's a 3 or 4 day charity event auction. Mm-hmm. Then I submit a tea scoop every year. And so the tea scoops are kind of stars, if you would, of the utensils. You have the tea containers and the tea scoops and the scrolls, and then the other ones are kind of, I don't know, all part of the same cast, if you would.
See, I would have thought that the bowl is the star.
The bowl is important, but probably not as much as, I mean, of course, if you don't have a bowl, you can't drink tea.
But you know, yeah, I think most people would think it's the bowl. Most Westerners, anyway.
Probably from the scroll, and then because the scroll gives you connection to people, right? Of course, the bowl does too because it's made by somebody. So we have the phrase in Japanese way of tea, wa kei sei jaku, which is harmony, respect, purity, and tranquility. And so these four principles are something that we strive for in our everyday lives.
And the scroll,
the hanging scroll in the alcove. It sets the idea of the theme. Perhaps, oftentimes they're seasonal. Oftentimes they're Zen related. Sometimes they're both Zen and seasonal.
What is on the scroll? Some haiku or picture or?
Not usually pictures, unless it's in the waiting room. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, you're looking at Zen phrases. So it's calligraphy.
And is it calligraphy in modern Japanese or the old Japanese?
It's old Japanese. Uh-huh. I mean, it's Zen phrasing, so it's in the old style Chinese. Like, for example, this chashaku that I'm just finished for the charity auction, I called it Jikishin. And so, Jikishin Kore Do, Buji Kore Kojutsu, Nichi Nichi Kore Kojutsu, there are so many different, there is no end to the ones. Nichi Nichi Kore Kojutsu, every day is a good day, that kind of a thing. So, it's, like I said, they can be related to the season or to the theme that you've selected to make your gathering about. So the jiku is a very important part. In a formal gathering, it hangs through the first seating, where the guests are drinking and eating and sharing the time together. And then in the second seating, the scroll will be replaced with flowers.
I kind of want to explore this thing, how you got from tea or from martial arts to tea. So in the beginning, what I have here is that you studied, judo. Help me with the pronunciation. Okay. Hungar Kung Fu?
Hungar, yes.
Taekwondo,
with
Korean.
With Jijiling, yes.
Okay. Hapkido, what is Hapkido?
Hapkido is maybe a Korean style.
It's
of
Korean?
Aikido, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know exactly. I can't remember. I studied it for a very short time.
Heng Quen?
Wing Chun.
Wing Chun, too. And there was something, H-U-E-N-G-K-U-E-N.
Hong Kun. Hong Kun, that's like the one that you already mentioned.
Okay, yeah. Okay. And of course, we talked about
Hungar and Hong Kun is similar.
Oh, really?
Yeah, same thing.
At Chinese arts, I'm guessing. Yeah. Arts, yeah. So, and Kendo we mentioned, which is how would you describe Kendo?
It's fighting, sword fighting using bamboo sticks in place of real swords.
Kendo, okay. Iaido too. Iaido is what, sword drawing?
It's drawing of the sword, yeah. Mm-hmm. Japanese swordsmanship.
Now, I've seen it, and it looks pretty intense. Like, I just saw one lesson, but the guy saw, there was a real sword in the class.
Right.
But he was like really concentrating on, is it always that?
It takes a form of concentration to be able to perform the movements that are depending on which kata or which form you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, you have to have what we call zanshin, which is a situational awareness all around you as to what's happening. And your particular form will be, okay, I'm fighting two people, or I'm fighting one person, or maybe I'm even fighting four people. And so you have to envision this. And so the concentration level is very there. But it shouldn't be something, it should be something that you should do naturally at the end of the day.
Mushin. And, what's that?
Mushin.
Mushin. So, and of course, the question that are, you know, I know everybody's going to be asking is, have you ever had to use your martial arts in a real situation?
Oh, God, yes, hundreds of times. I used to be a bouncer in Canada, so I've had 100 or more fights.
Do you have one?
I mean, as far as martial arts in tournament go, my last tournament fight as a kickboxer or a fighter like that was way back in the day. Mm-hmm. And so, but street fights, yes, of course, there are many different. There are a couple that come to mind. One at a club in Canada. I was actually, as I said, a bouncer there, and it was a bunch of people. So it was, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was four or five guys that took me down and gave me a workover. I got to get a couple good shots, but I mean, you know, you even if you are Bruce Lee, it was actually more than that, but I would say four or five in the front and then the rest of their cohorts in the back.
Jeez, yeah, I know. What I notice in the movies, too, is that they're always, like, when there's multiple attackers, they seem to always take turns.
Mm-hmm.
In real life, do they take turns?
It depends, again, like, if the people are schooled in how to multiple attack, it's different. I mean, it's not like, you know, oftentimes people do take turns, even if it's multiple, because they don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two guys move in on one guy, and it's like, okay, you go over here, you go over there, and okay, I'll just put my back to the wall, and somebody's got to come at me. It's not very common that people attack together. So, I mean, it depends on how they work as a group, too. I mean, if they're going to look at you and stand off one by one, then it's going to be a little bit easier. Because I actually dropped the first couple of guys, which made it easier because the other guys were a little hesitant. But then finally, the other guys got back up and away it went. So all I can remember is being laying against the door, getting whoomp, whoomp, whoomp. And the guy in the club, he'd locked the door because I was going to go back into the club, but the door was locked.
Jeez. Way to have your back.
And that's what happened. And then all I could hear was this whoomp, whoomp, whoomp on the door. Yeah, well, thank you very much. That was coming through me.
Yeah, that was me knocking three times. And can I ask, too, what do you think? Because lately there was the whole Ronda Rousey thing and Holly Holm and all that. What do you think of MMA?
I love it. I think it's the greatest thing on earth. This is something that should have been done such a long time ago because it cut through all the bullshit. mm-hmm. of what martial arts is to a lot of people. And it's martial arts is an art. It's something that you do for a spiritual endeavor. It's not a practical fighting form. You know, that's why, example, this fight that I told you, I got the crap kicked out of me. What ended it was the guy kicked me. As I said, I was down on the ground. He was kicking me, and I grabbed his leg, and I got his knee in a leg lock, and I was, you know, I had enough pressure on to break it, and so he told everybody to stop. And so, I mean, the Gracies are famous for saying that all fights go to the ground, and believe me, they do. And so if you're not familiar with how to grapple, it's there are no rules, and that's the difference. And so MMA is close enough to that. It's not like the Gracies first started the UFC where it was all different. Now it's all weight classed and things like that. And so it's a much different thing than when the Gracies first started it. But no, I think it's something that the Gracies have been doing forever. I mean, I've known of the Gracies for, like, way back in the day when they had a little tiny advertisement in the back of the Black Belt magazines, you know, Chuck Norris and Bruce Lee at the same time. So I tried to bring the Gracies over to Japan prior to the UFC opening.
Really?
Yeah, but nobody wanted to fight because they're like, who are they? Nobody knows them.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was, and eventually Takada did fight, yeah. And he fought Hickson. Hickson beat him twice, so.
I want to ask you as we wrap up here is, if you had discovered tea early on in your youth, do you think you would have incorporated it into your martial arts, or do you think that your youth would you have been accepting of it?
Interesting question. I find that because I'm a martial artist, it works into my tea much stronger, easier to remember movement and things like that. But the tea itself, and this is true of everything that I did in the martial arts and things like that, all my instructors would tell me I'm using too much strength. Mm. Chikara Onite, you remove your strength. And I'm like, I want to punch somebody. I want strength. You know? So it was a different idea of this balance of strength. And so T taught me a lot of that.